This is AM Rush. I'm your host, Alex Mitchell. Friday, April 24th, some headlines out of AM New York Metro. A probe is being launched into nursing homes where reports are coming out that they underreported cases of coronavirus. And more big cats test positive for COVID-19 at the Bronx Zoo. We're going to talk more on that. And we're speaking with a restaurant operator that's been feeding up to 15 hospitals in New York City. Something really amazing what they're doing. And it's the NFL draft. It's the closest thing we've had to live sports. We're going to talk to AM New York Metro sports editor Joe Pintorno and get his thoughts on what the Giants and Jets are doing. So let's get started with that probe into nursing homes. Governor Andrew Cuomo announced on Thursday that the New York State Health Department and Attorney General Letitia James will begin investigating nursing home novel coronavirus compliance. Now, that announcement comes after reports of nursing home staff had underreported novel coronavirus cases and deaths. Now, by law, nursing homes must provide staff personal equipment like gowns, masks, gloves, and conduct regular temperature checks. Violators could face fines or lose their licenses if they're not doing that. Once a nursing home resident tests positive for coronavirus, staff members are required to isolate them into quarantine. Staff members must also notify all residents and family within 24 hours if a resident becomes infected or dies of the virus. Now, the governor's announcement comes shortly after Mayor Bill de Blasio announced that a surge of supplies and staff would be sent to nursing homes across the city. Earlier in April, it was confirmed that a Malayan tiger at the Bronx Zoo had tested positive for coronavirus, the first instance of a jungle cat contracting the disease. Now, today, a report in the Bronx Times showed that a total of 8 big cats now have confirmed coronavirus at the zoo. Now, according to the Bronx Zoo, all 8 of the cats are doing well, they're behaving normally, they're eating well, and their coughing is greatly reduced. None of the zoo's snow leopards, cheetahs, or any other animals are showing signs of illness. It was just some of the jungle cats, and we're going to have more information on that story as it comes out. And now coming on AM Rush is the director of operations for the Brooklyn Chop House, Stratus Mafforgan, who has been doing an amazing project on feeding the first line responders in New York City hospitals. What started with him just doing one has turned into an amazing collaboration with other vendors and partners, and they're feeding up to 15 hospitals in New York City, which is just something amazing. And it's not like he's giving them sandwiches to go. They're delivering gourmet meals to these hospitals nightly. And we're going to talk to Stratus now about everything that they've been doing. Stratus, what have you been seeing ever since the closure or partial closure of restaurants went into effect?
Well, there's a lot of different perspectives here. One is that you can look at it as self-pity, say, hey, you know, why us? Why me? We had a thriving business at Brooklyn Chop House, and then we didn't, you know, and you could sit back and just and say, hey, we're just going to be a delivery takeout business. Hopefully we'll be able to pay our bills, or let's do something that, you know what, because I think this is going to be a time where people will reflect 20 years from now and 30 years from now and say, hey, what did you do to help? And what we've done at Brooklyn Chop House with my partners, Robert Cummings and Dave Thomas, we sat down and said, what are we going to do here? We've lost everything. And I said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to give back. And what we started doing is we started just one-on-one, because New York Presbyterian has always supported our restaurant. We just started sending delivery packages for like 10, 15 meals every night. They didn't ask for it. And we just brought it there and left it with the security desk. And then it just started growing from there. They started Instagramming it, and it became a really big thing, and then it got in the mainstream media. And now we're up to 15 hospitals serving over 2,000 meals a week. And that's, you know what? That makes gives some kind of purpose to this crisis, and that kind of feels good if you can use those words during such an pandemic.
From the healthcare workers that are getting these meals, have they given feedback to what their favorite menu item is that you guys are sending over?
Well, they love the idea because a lot of, you know, most people, not just healthcare workers, they've never seen Chinese mixed in with steak. So what it is that, you know, what we are is dim sum and chops. Where dumplings and chops have been called chopsticks, chop steak. You know, what's fun about it is that, you know, we've combined the two cultures together, which makes it for a fun meal. You know, there's not many places where you could put in dry-aged porterhouse steak by Pat LaFrieda and then all of a sudden team it up with salt and pepper lobster and a Peking duck. So that kind of made it fun, and these people have never seen anything like it. And just by their Instagram posts, which I have hundreds, you know what, makes it all worthwhile. They just love the whole idea that they're eating steak and they're eating Chinese, they're having some fried rice. And we actually go a little further. We've got some great partners that allowed us to get to 12 to 15 hospitals a week. Jay King's donated thousands of pounds of chicken. King Solomon donated thousands of pounds of steaks and meats. Junior's Cheesecake gave us like 500 cheesecakes. Voss Water sent about 1,000 cases of water. You know, on and on and on. We're even sending them bottles of wine by Forever Young. And so they're getting wine, coffee, water, cheesecakes, a beautiful spread of chicken, meats, all different types of proteins, vegetables, fried rice. And you know what? It makes us feel good because their reaction when they start posting things online, it's the best thank you can get.
And it seems like not just is the food industry reaching out to help everyone on the front line from healthcare workers and so on, but it's bringing you guys together in a way, too, it seems like.
100%. So when we first started this, we started doing our delivery takeout business, which was like, you know, 20, 30 orders a day. But you could see that the energy in the room was completely down. The morale was zero. And you know what? When we started doing this and then started taking pictures with the healthcare workers and the healthcare workers were posting things, you know what? I could see an uplift in everybody's spirit. And that was pretty cool. You know, that's a really incredible thank you when they do things like that.
Moving forward, when fortunately, and it seems like the stats are justifying this, there will come a day soon enough when we can go back to normal, when restaurants can open their doors again. Now, I can imagine it's not just going to be flip of a switch going back to normal. What do you expect in the upcoming weeks on transitioning back to regular life?
Well, the way we see it is, listen, you know, we were turning away more guests than we were serving on Friday and Saturday night. Those days, I think, are going to be a long way away. And I think those days will come back when the vaccine is in play. So for that, we're going to separate our tables. We've created a whole new headwear for our staff, front and back of the house. Everybody will have a shield. With the Brooklyn Chop House hat, they will have a shield that will go right down to the breastbone. So we're making adjustments to make our guests feel more comfortable and to also protect our staff. Because remember, when a kitchen line is working, our kitchen line is working elbow to elbow. So you know what? We have to balance that. We've got to make our customers and our guests feel comfortable, but we also have to be responsible to our staff. So we've changed the attire. We've changed the layout of the dining room, and I do think that, you know what, this isn't 1918, this is 2020, and what I'm hearing with Oxford Research, I do believe the vaccine is on its way. But until then, we have to make adjustments, and we'll gradually get back into hopefully our old business, which we had pre-March.
Stratus also said that he was disturbed that larger chain companies that took government assistance during coronavirus have not been feeding first responders and healthcare workers in the volume that they should.
And for the amount of volume that we're doing right now, if you put that in scale with the big companies, they should be feeding thousands and thousands of meals a week, thousands, tens of thousands, and they do absolutely zero. And shame on them for that. But I think at the end of the day, the consumer is going to have the last vote on who gave back when we're really in need.
I can imagine plenty of your clientele before all this had an affiliation with the hospitals you're helping now, and it's almost personal in a way.
It's very personal. And I'll tell you how this all started. I had a non-related procedure like 2 weeks before something, you know, I have asthma. And I was in there like the week before Corona, the week Corona was starting. I really didn't know much about it. And I was in the emergency room at New York Presbyterian, and I said, what's going on over there? And they said, oh, they're like 15 corona patients. I said, what does that mean? They said, oh, it's that virus, you know, the virus. And I said, the thing I've been reading about. This was like 5 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago. It was like 2 weeks before the shutdown. I didn't know that this was going on. And I'm watching. I was there actually for 10 hours for mine because they were so overwhelmed. My small little thing, which was nothing, I was there for 10 hours, and I watched what was going on. And that was the first, you know, thought that popped in my head when we got shut down. And I'm thinking about these frontline people that all have families, and they're all putting their life, I'm not even saying it lightly, they're not just putting their health, they're putting their life on the line to keep us safe. And that to me was like, you know what, this is a no-brainer. Let's just, you know what, it can't get any worse. We've lost everything. The little bit that we have left, let's just give it back. And you know what, thank God our pickup and delivery business has actually grown a lot. And that's how, between that and the partners, the vendor partners that we do business with have all called me and say, hey, how can we help? And they just started sending me thousands of pounds of produce, packaging, meats, wine, coffee. And that allowed us to go, because we were only doing one hospital. That's all I could really afford. And now we're up, some weeks we do 15, some weeks we do 12 hospitals. We do, on average, about 2-3 hospitals a night. It's a package for 20 to 30 dinners.
Wow.
And we love it. We love it. Happy that all, and that we didn't ask for it, and companies like J. King's and Voss Water and King Solomon, they just read about it in the newspaper when it ran a few weeks ago, and they're like, hey, what can we do to help? I said, you know, I'd love to bring this to 25 hospitals. I'm getting calls as far as Suffolk County.
Wow.
I can't deliver to them, but I tell them, hey, if you want to pick up is at 6 o'clock, and I'll have the whole package ready for you, and I'll bring it to your car. And I can do that because I have really great vendor partners. And that's what the leaders of our industry should be doing, and they're doing nothing. And that's what really upsets me.
So in a way, right now, you're giving a call to action to shape up and follow this precedent.
I mean, you know, I'm just a little mom-and-pop shop. And I think with our team, I mean, I'm very proud of them. I'm proud of everybody. You know, every night, even my guys that are actually, you know, on the line right now, when they go from work, some of them take an hour by train to get to work. Those are heroes too, because without them, I wouldn't be able to send the food to the healthcare, the medical healthcare frontliners. I wouldn't be able to do it without them. It's quite a chain. It's a village. You know, it takes a village. Definitely doesn't take one or two people. But when you see companies that are multi-billion-dollar conglomerates with 500 restaurants, and they close the restaurant and they lay off their staff and they don't do anything, shame on them. Shame on them.
Well, I guess to end on a more high note, in what you're doing and what other businesses are doing, what's been the most rewarding part of it?
Just the reaction, you know, the reaction that we actually are doing something. And people don't realize that food matters. You know, food really matters. It uplifts their spirits. You know, the difference of them having basically a gourmet meal than going to the local cafeteria or having a sandwich on the corner with their elbow on the counter is a huge difference. And they start taking pictures. I think it was Bellevue that did a 20-foot thank you. It was like literally 20 to 15 staffers, medical staff, holding up every letter of thank you, you know, to Brooklyn Chop House, and they put that on Instagram. Now, how good that makes me feel? There's no value to, there's no price tag you can put on that. And you know what? And that actually gives us enough energy. Let's see if we can go bigger. I spoke to Cuomo's people about Javits Center. If Javits really was in need, we were ready to step up and go to Javits Center. Central Park called me and they said, hey, you know, we don't have room for hot food. Can you send us some cheesecakes? I sent them 10 cheesecakes. Whatever it is, I have not said no to anyone. The only thing I've told them is that you got to come pick it up because I just can't have my staff stretch that thin. So 6 o'clock, there's always 2 or 3 cars. And they're picking up the food, and they're bringing it to 2 or 3 hospitals every night, sometimes 4.
And if someone that you haven't contacted yet wants to get in touch with you to work with you on this, what's the best way to reach out?
Well, they've been going. This is how everyone has been doing it. They've been going to brooklynchophouse.com and clicking on the info button because that all comes to me. I pretty much oversee everything. And then the other way is going to our Instagram account. That's where a lot of them have been coming from. They go to Instagram because we've been posting a lot of the pictures that, the healthcare workers have been posting. We've been reposting it. So they've been DMing us, say, hey, my daughter works at Elmhurst. Can you do something? Absolutely. All we ask for is a hospital ID, and there's no questions asked. I tell them Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, pick up at 6 o'clock. Just bring your hospital ID because, you know, unfortunately, we have some of the other elements that, peeks their head out in times like this. So all we ask for is the hospital ID to match the person who's picking it up, and we'll have dinner, soup to nuts, for 20 to 30 people that you can pick up, donated by Brooklyn Chop House.
Well, that's awesome, and it's certainly great feel-good news that I think we could all use right now. Stratus, one more thing. When we finally get to, kind of go back to the way that things were and the doors are reopened, whether or not there's protective face masks on staff, when I come into Brooklyn Chop House, what do you recommend I try?
The LSD.
Yeah?
We call it LSD. It's lobster, steak, and duck. It's salt and pepper lobster, Peking duck, and a porterhouse steak. No place on earth. That's what we keep saying. No place on earth where you can get those three items on one table.
Oh, man.
Now, if you start off with a pastrami dumpling and a French onion soup dumpling, it's game over.
Jeez. Okay. I think we need to make that happen then.
It might be my pleasure. Awesome. I can't wait for that day.
Absolutely. Stratus, thank you for coming on, and I can't wait to try that LSD lobster steak and duck if anyone's tuning in late.
Well, we're going to take you on a trip.
Well, I wish you the best of luck, and
thank you so much. Keep doing what you're doing.
And I hope that people listening help you out here.
Yeah, listen, I hope, like I said, it's all about the mom and pops. That's what it's about. And thank you for having me.
Of course, absolutely. And like I said, I can't wait to come in and try everything you guys have. So,
thank you.
All right, and now it is NFL draft time. We're going now to AM New York Metro sports editor Joe Pantorno to talk about the moves that the New York Jets and Giants made in the first round last night. In the back of my head, I just hear Sandra Bullock in a southern voice talking about how important the offensive tackle is. The New York Giants pick one. The New York Jets pick one. Joe, I want to hear your thoughts on this first round so far.
Well, it's been pretty interesting, and I hate using that cliche because whenever, you know, we label these things, we try and just use the word interesting to be conservative, I suppose. But really, for the most part, the first 10, 11 picks have gone as close to chalk as a lot of NFL draft analysts and mockers could have seen. Really, going into this draft, we expected to see an abundance of offensive linemen taken within either the top 10 or the top 15. It was just the way the class of 2020 worked out. You had four really good offensive linemen set to come out. Georgia's Andrew Thomas, Iowa's Tristan Wirfs, Alabama's Jedrick Wills, and Louisville's Mekhi Becton. So really, you know, we usually don't see this much activity in terms of offensive linemen this early, but when you have such talent, and in really half of those four offensive linemen, NFL-ready talent, it's understandable. But you know, for the lack of trades, I think we just had one as we're speaking now. That's been a little surprising, I would say. But it's nice to see the unsung heroes getting their time to shine on draft night.
As someone who was a center in high school, nothing thrills me more than to see the offensive line finally be something cool. But going past just the fact that they're enhancing the line, what does this show as a commitment for the Giants to Daniel Jones and the Jets for Sam Darnold as quarterback, getting them more protection? I think it goes just above beyond playmaking and to the point where they want to make these guys part of the franchise for the long run.
Well, it obviously says everything you need to know about their commitment to both franchises' young quarterbacks, just because both the Giants and Jets had other avenues to take at their respective picks. Going into the draft, we were debating whether or not the Giants would either go offensive line, which they obviously needed to improve on to protect Daniel Jones, who has been turnover prone in his rookie year. We all saw that. And also, it's going to preserve Saquon Barkley for as long as possible because the shelf lives of running backs are short. We all know that. And somebody of his explosive capabilities carries the threat of him flaming out earlier than anticipated. So it's important to keep the foundation of the team, I guess, on their feet and as healthy and in as great a position to succeed as possible. So, you know, it really, that was what we were thinking heading into the draft, that they were going to go O-line. But there was also the possibility of the Giants going and taking Clemson's Isaiah Simmons, who, you know, who I watched all last year. And, you know, he, this guy had NFL scouts salivating. He's the jack of all trades linebacker who can also play safety. And even if you're shorthanded, he can go in and play cornerback. He could do it all. And that was giving Giants fans the illusion of grandeur where, you know, they were maybe thinking, hey, we can come away with a guy that might remind us of Lawrence Taylor. Not saying he could ever hit those high expectations, but the skill set alone kind of created that hope that maybe for a franchise predicated on defense, as much as the Giants have been for a majority of their existence, Isaiah Simmons could be the next great thing for that team that, for the most part, really doesn't have a bona fide face to it. And that really happened when Landon Collins was given the opportunity to walk in free agency. But for the Jets, I think this is a little bit more of a controversial pick. And I'm not saying it's the wrong pick, because really they couldn't have gone wrong given the way things played out for them. I really thought that they should have gone for a wide receiver. Robbie Anderson's gone. He signed with the Carolina Panthers. And now you're left with Quincy Enunwa, who has been injury prone for the last 2 years. He's had neck problems, which is extremely dangerous to deal with, especially for a football player. And Jamison Crowder, who really had a nice first season with the Jets, but he's a slot receiver. You need that true explosive outside threat. And at number 11, the Jets had those options. They had any of, again, there was another core four of wide receivers that they could have taken, whether it was Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs, Justin Jefferson out of LSU, or CeeDee Lamb at Oklahoma. So given the fact that they passed on this opportunity to get Darnold, that high-flying playmaker, to simplify things and just kind of recenter themselves, go back to square one. Okay, yes, we know that Sam Darnold needs a legitimate outside threat, but what's more important right now is making sure that our running back stays on his feet. What's important, quarterback, making sure that our quarterback stays on his feet and stays healthy, and we put him in the best position to succeed. It's also imperative that we give our all-pro running back, who we give a big contract to, that Adam Gase is not a fan of. We need to make sure that he is in the best position to succeed, because he did not have a good first season, and he really wasn't given much of a chance to do so. So really, both of these picks are both teams admitting that, hey, we need to go back to basics here. We need to start from the nitty-gritty, the interior. And when we're talking about Dave Gettleman, something that he's been preaching about since he's come on as Giants GM, this is the chance to kind of retool things. There are pieces here, there are weapons here, but now it's time to fully support them and fully lay that foundation to build something solid. So
starting with what you said about the New York Jets, going with the O-line when clearly there were a lot of wide receivers on the market, still a lot of good ones out there for a second round, of course, not exactly top tier, but what could be an asset. A question I have for you about that, do you think that the Jets are working on some sort of trade right now where they realize, okay, let's acquire the lineman in the draft and trade for the receiver?
It could certainly be an option. I haven't really heard anything of about them moving up into the first round to get a second pick. What I was really hearing heading into the draft is that they were willing to just trade from their number 11 spot, whether that was trading up or trading down. And really, they kind of showed their cards when they, you know, say if they wanted to trade up. They were kind of willing to show their cards there and tip their hand in saying that, you know what, they were probably going to go with a offensive lineman. Just because we knew that the wide receivers, at least the bulk of them, were going to go between the 10 to 20 range. So the only way that the Jets were going to move up is if they legitimately thought that that true offensive line talent that they wanted wasn't going to be there. And then in that same breath, if they traded down, then you kind of have to realize, okay, then their top priority was a wide receiver. Now, like I said, there was that core four of wide receiver prospects that are there. If you look into the second round, there are potentially other options available, whether that's LaVisca Chenault Jr. out of Colorado, whether that's Brandon Ayuk out of Arizona State. There are options there, but it's not that top tier, you know, game changer that's going to immediately step in and make a difference. So again, it's, you know, these are, again, hypotheticals we're dealing with right now, but you know, that's an option. At least the Jets could search.
And now jumping over to the Giants, when Tom Coughlin was, you know, running the ship over there, you had a different feeling or a different impression of what commitment to excellence meant than you've seen in the past few seasons with the New York Giants. Meaning that under Coughlin's regime, you knew every single down played, even if it was a bogus season, was a step to redemption, was a step to higher ground, and eventually two championships. Now, ever since Gettleman came in, coaching changes. Now we're looking at Joe Judge getting his crack at an opportunity to be a first head coach. Do you sense that same kind of commitment from the Giants that there was some seasons ago, or is this Judge's chance to earn trust and he wants to play it safely? What do you think on that?
I think it's too early to tell right now. And I think a lot of that commitment to excellence that you alluded to under Coughlin really derived from former GM Ernie Accorsi up top. He, you know, a Hall of Fame executive, at least in my book, I think he is, you know, a huge reason why the Giants were able to reach such heights. And we kind of saw the organization take that downturn and gradually nosedive once Accorsi left and once Jerry Reese came in and once Coughlin left and, you know, McAdoo comes in and Shurmur comes in. There was really a lot of dysfunction, again, towards the top of the Giants food chain here. I'm not sold on Gettleman. I think he did make a very good call in bringing in Joe Judge. I initially wanted Matt Rhule to come in, but Joe Judge has a track record of winning. He's been in the most successful programs in the nation, whether that's in college with Alabama or in the NFL with the Patriots. So I think that Judge is going to help bring the culture change, I think, more than Gettleman can. And I think Judge is the right guy to be whispering in Gettleman's ear if he's given that opportunity. And like you said, I think this is the first hint that maybe the culture might be changing within the Giants.
And when you look back again at those two Giants championship seasons, Eli Manning had a fortress around him. And the Giants in 2007-2008 had a Hall of Fame offensive line for the ages. Last season, they had one that was more porous than SpongeBob SquarePants.
Yeah, that's been it's been a big problem, and it's been a concern of late. It hasn't just been last year. It's been the last couple of years, and I really think that's what accelerated the departure of Eli Manning. Not so much as, yeah, we knew once his contract was up, he was going to be gone. But the fact that he fell out of favor so quickly, and I think that was accelerated by Ben McAdoo as well. But you know, you had an immobile quarterback running for his life for, you know, the better part of the last three seasons. So he was set up to fail in the first place. So I think really somebody with half a brain over there had to identify that that was the problem. And, you know, they took swings and they missed over the past few years, whether you're looking at Justin Pugh, whether you're looking at Eric Flowers, they just didn't work out. They signed Nate Solder. He struggled mightily here. You know, they come in and they bring on Cam Fleming, but he's never started more than seven games in a season in his six NFL seasons. So, again, the book's still out on him. So drafting Andrew Thomas was a huge step in the right direction in just stating to the fans that they're willing to take a sensible step forward rather than trying to swing for the fences and just drafting best player available, which a lot of teams take that avenue, and sometimes it just doesn't work out.
Now, moving forward, and I agree with what you said, and in a lot of ways, and I tweeted this out earlier, I feel like Thomas is almost intentional redemption for Eric Flowers. Where, you know what I mean? I feel like he is brought in to say, this is what Flowers was meant to be. Now we have the right guy for the job.
Right. And the Giants are getting a talent that can immediately step in. This is a guy who basically for 3 years was playing amongst the best offensive line in the country. Georgia every year is they're basically a favorite for offensive line of the year in the nation. And, you know, the numbers speak for themselves. Even just looking at last year, Georgia has a guy, DeAndre Swift, and he comes out and, you know, you're looking at the stats at the surface. He has 1,218 yards rushing, which is, again, it's a nice season. But go a little deeper, and you see that it's only on 196 rush attempts. So this is a guy who's averaging 9 yards per rush. And most of this is coming, you know, with Andrew Thomas as the anchor of Georgia's offensive line. So if I'm Saquon Barkley right now, I'm licking my chops. I'm ready to go because you have a bona fide run blocker who's about to be inserted to the offensive line, and he can really play both sides. He can play left or right tackle, depending on who the organization trusts more, whether it's Solder or Fleming. He can come in and immediately make a difference.
Now jumping over to Gangrene, second round, how do you think the Jets are going to take this?
You know, it's tricky. I would see them or anticipate them trying to get a wide receiver because we all know that that's a enormous need. And really it was, you know, going into the 11th pick while they were on the clock, we weren't short until the last couple of seconds, and then it finally leaked that, okay, Becton was the favorite. Again, which was a little bit of a surprise because I think a lot of us had Tristan Wirfs rated a little higher than Becton. But regardless, the Jets got a stud here. And, you know, this draft goes from a very good one for the Jets to a great one, in my opinion, if they take a wide receiver in the second round.
And now jumping over to the Giants, how do you think they're going to handle the second round?
The Giants need to address their defense, particularly their front seven. And when it comes to the second round, I think that they need to just draft the best player available. Really, when you think about the best Giants teams, probably within the last 40 years, one of their best calling cards has been a dominating pass rush. And you just go down the line, however great the teams have been, there's always been one or two or three. There's, you know, Strahan, Umeniora, Tuck, Taylor, Banks, Johnson, Carson. The list does, you know, it goes on. Really being able to get that bona fide pass rusher that alleviates just a little bit of pressure for a secondary that has not been impressive in the slightest, but they made improvements by getting James Bradbury this offseason. That's going to help big time. And, you know, there's going to be a little bit of a risk hoping that a second rounder can come in and star immediately. But I think that's why the Giants did what they did this offseason and brought in guys like Kyler Fackrell and Blake Martinez just to hold the linebacking core together until I think the next best thing comes along. Fackrell has not played a lot, but in the time he has, he's been impressive. So there's hope that at least he can do something there. But really getting that next franchise linebacker that can be that field general for the defense, that's going to go a long way. So I'd like to see the Giants take a swing for that and then kind of move out towards the secondary later in the draft.
So there are two guys coming out, and we talked about this prior, two guys coming out of the University of Notre Dame that I think would fit the Giants program well. Those are two very traditional programs that share a lot of common ground in what they expect from the character of the players. And truth be told, I think that's a big reason as to why Odell Beckham Jr. didn't work out with the New York Giants. The two guys, it's not a linebacker, but he has his brother Romeo. Julian Okwara coming out of Notre Dame at the defensive end. Do you think there's any interest in bringing him on?
I mean, I really haven't heard much, but at the end of the day, this is a promising defensive end prospect. And again, that's been a position in need for the Giants for a while, especially after they dealt Olivier Vernon. But, you know, I really haven't watched a lot of him, but I've liked his intangibles from what I see. He's pretty quick off the line. You know, I'm comparing him to top prospects here. So it's, I don't want to say mediocre, but you know, it's second level jump off the line. It's second level strength. He's a mid round pick in my opinion. Could he be a sleeper? I mean, sure. You come in and produce at a prestigious university like Notre Dame on a pretty big stage, and you know, you have a chance to translate well to the NFL. So the possibility's there. I really haven't heard anything about him being linked to the Giants or the other way around, but definitely a name to watch later on in the draft, sure.
He does have the inside information coming from his brother Romeo Okwara. I thought that might be interesting to see big bro, little bro, but like you said, maybe he's little brother also to some of the other assets out there coming in the second round, but we'll see how the Giants handle it. Another sleeper from Notre Dame, this one in the secondary, I think Alohi Gilman, and I've seen him play in front of a New York crowd when Notre Dame took on Syracuse at Yankee Stadium. I think that this guy is not just slept on, but has shades of Corey Webster in the way that he plays and in the way that he moves. And again, he has that traditionalist mindset that even if it takes him a season or two more to develop, in the long haul, you will get more out of him because of his emotional and his professional maturity that develops as fast as his talent.
Right. And he is mature in some aspects. But again, there are a lot of concerns with his game. And I'll get to that in a second. But really what I like about him is his urgency and his aggression. He's not afraid to step up. He's not afraid to attack. He's not afraid to try and predict and jump routes. I'm a big fan of his run recognition. He's able to quickly identify and try and bring support to the ground game, which I really like. I'm a little hesitant when it comes to his pursuit of ball carriers. You know, I like his recognition. I don't necessarily like his pursuit for the ball carrier. And that kind of brings limitations. He's pretty good in man coverage. His zone coverage is not great, and that has a lot of people questioning his football IQ. And again, when you're looking for a corner that could step in immediately, you know, that's going to keep teams away from him a lot. But with that being said, there might be good teams who are just looking for depth or for young depth that might see him. And, you know, they say, well, you know what, he has some shortcomings, but this is something that, you know, this is a guy that we can work with. So really, you know, this is an athletic corner, an aggressive corner. And, you know, I could see him kind of cutting his cloth on special teams for a year or two, and then maybe making that next step to getting legitimate playing time in an NFL secondary.
And I'm going to put you in the home office of the general manager before I let you go. And Joe, once again, thanks for coming on to AM Rush at night, I guess PM Rush at this point. What do you say, or who, how would you cap off the draft? You don't have to give me specific names, but round by round for the Jets and then the Giants, what would you be seeking?
All right, well, for the – I guess we'll start with the Giants here. For the second round, I think I would look for a linebacker. Like we said, I think it's imperative that they find a you know, a stalwart for the front seven. I think that's really important. And then I think you move back. You move back into the secondary. I think you look for a safety or a corner in round three. In round four, look for that defensive end. And then round five, go into the interior, because that defensive line really doesn't have a lot of immediate redeemable aspects. And then your later picks in round seven, then you can maybe look for a skill player or two. Look for a wide receiver. If you want, you know, maybe look for a corner. Take a chance on a guard, because I know they have 3 seventh-round picks. So, again, it's a loose plan, and it all really depends on how things pan out for them. But that should be, I guess, a loose guideline of how to get the most help immediately. For the Jets, again, I think the first two rounds are pretty straightforward. Round one, you're good. You got your offensive lineman. Round two, go for your wide receiver, whether that's Ayuk, whether that's Chenault, whether that's Jalen Reagor out of TCU, who I really like. I think that would be a nice pickup for them. Round three, look for a center. Again, I think the Jets are still looking for, you know, the guy to officially take the torch from Nick Mangold. That's important. And I think they have another round three pick. Go secondary, go safety, find some support for Jamal Adams, or possibly a replacement for Jamal Adams, because trade talks always seem to be following him wherever he goes. And then I guess look for depth. So, you know, in rounds 4 through 7, look for another wide receiver. Look for another offensive tackle. Look for a punter. Why not? So, again, the Jets have a lot of holes to fill. And, you know, they'll be able to do it pretty comfortably here. But really, the first two rounds are vital. They got their offensive lineman. Now get your wide receiver. And that should be enough to make it a pretty successful draft for them.
And Joe, just jumping back to the Giants quickly, I was thinking, when was the last time the Giants had a memorable tight end? To me, it goes to Kevin Boss or maybe Jake Ballard, who, while short-tenured, was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I would say really Kevin Boss was the last memorable one, but I'm already sold on Evan Engram, and while he's not your traditional tight end, he's more of a hybrid. I think that he's going to bring an added level to the Giants passing game. And that's going to make Daniel Jones that much better. That's going to give him another target that is going to expand the passing game. And if we remember some of Eli Manning's best years, he went to his tight end a lot, whether that was Jeremy Shockey, whether that was Kevin Boss, whether that was Larry Donnell. So really, if the Giants can get a lot out of Evan Ingram, I really think that's all they need. I understand, Red Ellison isn't in the picture anymore. So if they wanted to maybe grab one in the later rounds, that's fine. But really, they're any other tight end who they bring on, and I know they signed his name is escaping me, but they signed a tight end from the 49ers. They're competing for scraps, for backup. So I think they should really be all in on Evan Ingram.
Now, the reason I'm bringing up a tight end for the Giants, not for passing, but for the run game and for pass protection, perhaps the best way right now to enhance the offensive line is to get someone off of the offensive line in the meantime.
Yeah, that's definitely an option. And the guy's name who I'm thinking of is Levine Toilolo, by the way. I think that he could possibly add some tight end help, some blocking help. But again, that's another aspect that the Giants need to, I guess, address, because if the tackle spots aren't up to par, whether that's Solder, whether that's Fleming, whether that is now Thomas, then yes, it's going to be imperative for them to get a tight end who can step up and block. So the book will be out on that.
All right, Joe, thank you so much for coming on AM Rush. I know we're going to be doing this again soon. Before I leave you off, any final thoughts on what's going on in the draft?
No, not really. I mean, it's been as entertaining as it possibly can be from Roger Goodell's basement. It's been a little slow moving and a little frustrating at times, but at least we have live sports to watch tonight and maybe for the next day or two. So, enjoy it while we can, sports fans. And Alex, thanks again so much for having me on, and can't wait to do it again.
Of course, and my personal favorite part so far was that Goodell still got booed, but virtually. So
has to happen, of course. It's a tradition like no other.
All right, Joe, take care. We'll be, I'm sure we'll be talking again by the end of the weekend, following up on the draft.
All right, brother, sounds good.
Take care.
You too.
And that was AM Rush. Have a great weekend. Stay tough, New York. I know you can do it. Stay strong out there for all of us. I will see you Monday. We have so many exciting programs and so many interesting people coming on the show. Thank you for listening. We're going to be back soon. Take care, and remember, wash your hands.